is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sim flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Is it working? Can you feel it?
It is working. I can feel it. I have my hands on the radio as we speak, feeling the power coming through.
I put a bunch of reverb on you. You sound like Pastor Ben delivering the cathedral at the Enorma Dome. Ben, why do you sound so good? You don't always sound this good. You sound better than you've ever sounded. What's up, man?
Because we're working off a software that has just been developed, and it is just stellar compared to what we were. We used to be using Skype to connect, you know, to our fiends from all over the world. And now we use FiendPhone, which is the latest and the greatest and the best that's ever been made. And we thank Derek for all the hard work he put into building it.
Yeah, Derek Slope. He built that. I helped build that. I asked him to build that. I raised some money for him to build that. And you, sir, should know, Derek Slopey, that you're doing a great job, and I dig it. And the program is in alpha, which is not even beta. Like, the public doesn't even have this. Only the fiends have it. And Derek's making about a new version of it every day with improvements, and we keep testing it. It's got a few little issues. You may hear a few little crackles or dropouts or something, but you hear that with Skype, too, sometimes worse. And Ben is coming in over satellite, you know, over radio FiendPhone not wired connection in his mobile command unit, where he drives around the country in a big land yacht,
an RV
solving mysteries with his wife. And so you also are using a new mic. I got you a new mic for Christmas, and it's
I'm using the Michael Dean approved microphone.
Yes.
What's the name of it?
The Audio Technica USB or 2005 USB, which, if anyone out there wants to get it and sound this good, you can go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link over on the right sidebar. Get the mic our co-hosts use. You can also go to fiendphone.com to read up on FiendPhone. You can't have it yet for you radio listeners. You cannot have it yet at any price, but it will be free when it's released. And so Ben is usually using about $1,000 worth of gear and mixers and microphones and outboard stuff and Skype. And now he's using just a $50 USB mic and free software. So this is the wave of the future, people. A lot of radio shows complain about the government. They complain about the world. What do? They tell you to go out and vote and call your congressman. How's that working for you? What do the Freedom Fiends do for you? We build the cyber roads, man. We build the roads that enable anyone to do a radio show from anywhere and sound about as good as if they're in a, you know, billion-dollar radio studio conglomerate.
You know, and not to slap down Skype, because Skype, fulfilled its purpose.
Amazing.
While it was still, sure, it's like talking about, that was a really good Model T I used to have, but now, you know, now I've got a 32 Ford Coupe, and it just blows that Model T away. I mean, that's the difference here between, you know, a modern vehicle with a V8 as opposed to that rattly old thing that you have to crank on it to get it going. I did a podcast not long ago with the guy that does the Dangerous History podcast, and it literally took us an hour to get Skype to cooperate and work with us. We just don't have to face that with FiendPhone. Once it's set up, it's going to just run perfectly.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what we're doing, and I'm digging it. And Ben Stone usually sounds pretty crunchy, and today he sounds pretty much loud and clear. So what are we going to talk about today? Duck soup? You eating some duck soup there, Ben?
I like my duck soup. Yeah, Marx Brothers, the four Marx Brothers, not just the regular three that most people remember, but the four Marx Brothers
Zippo.
Were in duck soup. Yeah, Zeppo and Harpo and Chico. It's often mispronounced as Chico, but it's actually Chico. That's kind of a little rant that I have. A lot of people pronounce it Chico, but that would be the Hispanic version of the word. And he was Italian, and the common way of pronouncing it would actually be Chick. It's an abbreviation of Carlos or of the Germanic Carl. But in an affectionate term among Italians, you would put the vowel on the end to make it Chico. as opposed to, you know, using it in the Spanish version, which would be Chico.
Yeah, and to be clear, we're going to say spoiler alert at the beginning of this, but is there really a spoiler alert for a movie that's like 80 years old?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was made in 1933, if I recall. Yeah, 1933. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing that I've noticed about this movie is that it's kind of the Rosetta Stone of comedy. It kind of, I like comedy. I watch a lot of comedy. I watch a lot of stand-ups. I watch a lot of movies and TV shows that are comedy. And, you know, they say that comedy helps you live because all comedy is in some way or another laughing at death, at the inevitability of death. And I think that's why people like comedy. I'm a huge fan of comedy, and usually kind of dark comedy or kind of blue comedy, like, you know, I'm not shocked by cussing in comedy or adult scenarios and discussions. I really like Louis C.K. I like all sorts of stuff. I could name a list and rattle it off here. I like Penn and Teller. They're more than just comedians, but, you know, most of these people are. They're all actors, performers, magicians, whatever. And I really, watching this film for the first time the other day, I noticed that basically almost everything I've seen a comedian do since then existed in this movie. You know, whether it's, and not that they invented all of it, but they invented some of it. You know, slapstick, breaking the fourth wall, talking to the camera, illusions with mirrors, recurring jokes, punchlines that are delivered, you know, halfway through the movie they're set up in the beginning of the movie and the punchline is given in the end of the movie. They broke a lot of ground with this thing. If they weren't the inventors of all of it, they were certainly, you know, Ford didn't invent the car, but he put one in every carriage house. But a lot of the stuff they actually invented that they did in this, and it was pretty groundbreaking.
A lot of it was carryover from their vaudeville show that they used to do when they were young. But yeah, a lot of it, you know, there's even like innuendo in there, adult innuendo, and there's double entendres. And
there's kind of complex political humor, too.
There is. You know, you and I have talked before that Groucho was somewhat of a, leaning toward a socialist, leftist type of a maybe progressive point of view. But there's really, if you watch the movie Duck Soup, you really see more of a kind of an anti-government, anti-socialist. It's built into there. The thing with Groucho and his political stands, I think it's like a lot of the people we've talked about who were doing the best they can with the information that they had. And when Groucho would look at what is better, allowing the poor to starve or taxing people to help support the poor, and he didn't have a third option there, and so his compassion went to help the poor, but it was strictly because there was no third option given to him. I think a lot of people in Hollywood make this mistake. They don't spend the time to really research the stuff out. They haven't read volumes of Mises and Rothbard, and they haven't read, you know, Lysander Spooner, and they haven't read, you know, these different things like this. So they're working on the best information they have, which, you know, if you are a compassionate person and you don't understand the principles of liberty, then you kind of have a tendency to fall toward a leftist.
Republicans can take some blame for this because they have so many times throughout history come off as Mr. Burns, as the cruel taskmaster, you know, not just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but, you know, people who are poor are idiots and it's their fault. I mean, everyone from, probably Abraham Lincoln to William F. Buckley to Stefan Molyneux, you know, all those right wing great men types go to that bad place pretty often. Although I got to say that Marx, and it's funny that this is quoted from a book called Lenin and Marx, and it's about John Lennon. It's quotes from John Lennon and Groucho Marx. It's not from the real commie guys. And, In there, it says that in a 1967 segment of Firing Line, which was an early political talk show with William F. Buckley, who was kind of the father of the modern conservative movement, Buckley was interviewing Groucho Marx, and Groucho Marx, you know, basically said, "I frankly find Democrats a better and more sympathetic crowd. I'll continue to believe that Democrats have a greater regard for the common man than Republicans do. However, the whole political left is a Garden of Eden for incompetence."
And that really shows, you know, his frustration that he recognized that there was so many. It was kind of the lesser of evils type argument. Like I don't know that there's a third option. So if I look at these two, my favorite choice is this one because it's the lesser of evils. But as we know, we've talked about this on the Freedom Fiends as long as there have been Freedom Fiends. And you used to talk about it with Nima all the time, that choosing the lesser of evil is still choosing evil. I mean, you are still choosing evil.
And we're not saying vote for the Libertarian Party. Those people are, they're still wanting to use a state solution. And they also have about as much chance of becoming, you know, politically powerful as, as I have of hiring Rush Limbaugh to be my sidekick on this show and, you know, do the sound effects. So,
To be really rude, I would almost say, well, no, I have said this, so I might as well say it now, that the idea that the Libertarian Party is going to somehow come to power and fix everything is just downright delusional.
Yeah. And what is our result, real quick, before we go to there? What is our, what's our third option, our third rail of politics? No, our third, before we go to the break, you got about a minute here.
Just to ignore it, get out of it. Don't be polluted by anything of the political nature, because politics, by its very nature, is theft. And it's the only way they can exist, through theft and, you know, mismanagement of stolen funds and so forth.
I really like that.
So just
saying,
get out of it.
First of all, I really like that we could both talk over each other and have it not crunch the other guy out, unlike Skype. And second, and I'm not getting down on Skype. Skype is still great for certain things. And for Fiend Phone, you need headphones. You can't use it without headphones. You need a quiet room and a few other criteria, but you can definitely get better sound over the distance than with Skype. But I really like that saying that all, I forget who said it, but it's all elections are just advanced auctions on stolen goods. That really nails it.
Exactly.
Man. Yeah. Yep. So Duck Soup, man, we're going to talk more about Duck Soup. Great Marx Brothers movie from a long time ago, going all the way back to 1933. Worms. We're going to go to the free market. Then we're going to come back, talk about some duck soup. Having some duck soup here in Slidell, Louisiana, and New Orleans, and other places around the country.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Yeah, I think...
Freedom Fiends! Having some tasty duck soup with my friend Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. I am Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, talking to Ben Stone, the Bearded Possum. We're talking about Duck Soup, the 1933 Marx Brothers film, which is the, it is to modern comedy.
Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, I was trying to think of another one. Rosetta Stone is more implying something used to translate everything else. I would say this is more, Duck Soup, the movie, is to modern comedy what blues music is to most modern popular music, and rock and roll especially.
That's a good comparison, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has all the foundational chords, you might say.
Yeah.
And all the riffs.
Yep, all the riffs. All right, so interesting thing about the movie for Duck Soup, it takes place in the mythical kingdom or the mythical country of Freedonia, Freedonia. Freedonia, the reason they picked the name of that, and it's an absurd, you know, it's an absurd country run by it's a country run by absurd politicians who are horrible. And the guy played by Groucho Marx plays becomes like the president of it or the king or whatever it is. And the reason they picked the name Freedonia, it's an allusion to Fredonia, New York, which is Freedonia. It's the same word, I think, with one less E, where they got booed off the stage doing what did they call stand-up back then? Vaudeville. Doing vaudeville.
Vaudeville,
so,
yeah.
So Fredonia, New York was not ready for it and thought it was too advanced or too weird or too cool or too something. You know, a lot of people want the same old thing. Kind of like when Devo were playing in bars before they got signed in Ohio, and people would yell, "Play some Stones!" So they immediately they worked up a really deconstructed version of Satisfaction by the Stones. So Fredonia, New York is one town over from the town I grew up in upstate New York. So I know, I swear, like, the people there would still boo the Marx Brothers off stage. They're still reactionary. They're still, you know, New York State, upstate New York has a really long history of like really intolerant religions starting there. A whole bunch of them started there, and some of them are still around. Some of them aren't, but yeah, it's, and I got out of that place like 4 months after my 18th birthday. Like, as soon as I could leave upstate New York, I left, and my parents were not abusive. I wasn't fleeing oppression. I was just like, man, this place is boring and people don't get anything that's cool and modern. And I'm going to leave. And I did. And I'm really glad I did. But yeah, man, Fredonia, New York is the namesake of Fredonia, the kingdom in the movie Duck Soup.
And isn't that area of New York sort of the home of, without mentioning a brand name, a major grape juice producer that is not turned into wine, that kind of competed with wine?
Oh, well, well, I'm not going to say anything bad about them. It's Welch's. I mean, everyone I knew worked at Welch's when I was a kid, and I picked grapes in the summer for Welch's, you know, had summer jobs like going out, not picking grapes, tying grapes, actually. The grapes are not picked in the summer. But, yeah, I worked in the grape vineyards, not a lot. I mean, you know, like 20 hours a week, a couple weeks a summer for 3 or 4 summers just to get some extra pay. But yeah. And actually the day I was born, the great grandson of the founder of Welch's, whose last name was Welch and was part of that dynasty, lived across the street from us and put a flag out in honor of my birth the day I was born, Ben.
Wow.
Put out an American flag for young Michael's entry into the world. Yeah.
And I don't know that much about it. So I don't know if the Welch's family, you know, actively pursued prohibition and so forth, but they certainly made a lot of money from it, in the sense that the grape juice, the non-fermented grape juice that they were selling, was commonly used even in churches as a replacement for sacramental wine.
Oh, that was the point. The guy, I don't know if he was... I'm assuming he was pro the government blocking alcohol, but I know that the reason, well, you learn this in school in Westfield, New York, that Welch's started because the guy was anti-alcohol and very religious and did not want wine being used for communion. He decided the Bible was wrong and the wine had to be pasteurized, so it wasn't wine. And that's how Welch's was born. I like Welch's grape juice. I have imbibed an inordinate amount of Welch's grape juice in my life. And this is not a product placement. It's just fact.
That always struck me as odd because, you know, my whole family is Baptist. And even as a child, that seemed to contradict the Bible to me.
Grape juice or communion?
Yeah, using grape juice for communion. Yeah.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Freedom Fiend Phone. This So, Ben, you got a bunch of audio gear for sale, don't you?
Yeah, I have almost a whole studio of stuff that is has been now outdated due to this one microphone that you sent
This one microphone and Fiend phone. Yeah, man, it's the...
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you could travel the world with everything you need to make a do a radio show from anywhere now with Fiend phone, with people who are in other locations live. You could fit that in a purse or, like, you know, a kid's backpack, you know, like
if you had one laptop bag.
Yeah. A little small laptop, $200 at Walmart. You know, this certain particular mic, I've tested like 50 mics and this is the one to use, which is $50, and, you know, some $20 headphones. As long as the headphones are not open air, they have to, block out all the sound. Otherwise it echoes back because there's no noise reduction or echo cancellation in this. Unlike Skype. By choice, because Skype and things like that are made for using in any environment with or without headphones, with any microphone. And this is made specifically for broadcast quality with a good microphone. It's not that expensive, but yeah, you need a noise, not noise canceling headphones, but not the ones with active circuitry, but the ones with, you know, they keep the sound from leaking out. So you can go to fiendphone.com.
With the big foamy things around your ears.
Oh, yeah. And you can go to fiendphone.com. That's freedom. No, that's F-E-E-N, as in Foxtrot Echo, Echo November. And then phone, P-H-O-N-E, fiendphone.com for more information. And you can subscribe to our newsletter. I'm intrigued by your possibilities, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter. That's what Homer Simpson says. But you can do that via RSS feed and get it electronically for free, and you'll know when Fiend Phone comes out. If you want to conquer the airwaves or the internets, and or just have great-sounding free talking with someone else you love far away without having all the artifacting that other methods of telephony-type stuff have. So, Ben, we're talking about the Marx Brothers show from 1933.
Duck Soup.
Duck Soup. Tell me more about Duck Soup. What are your theories, sir?
Well,
spoiler alert.
The movie
starts... Spoiler alert. All right, go on.
The movie starts out with essentially a government in failure. And they actually say in the movie that taxes are outrageous and the people are protesting and the government has been mismanaged. And so they're desperate. They, you know, government is failing. What do we do? What do we do? What
All
do we
governments
do?
Are failing.
And so they... Yeah. And so they look to the richest person in the government or in the land, which is this lady played by Margaret Dumont, which Margaret Dumont is a standard in Marx Brothers movies that rarely gets the kind of attention she should have.
Doesn't she always play the kind of wealthy dowager type? Ooh, yes.
Yeah, she plays the straight man in all the comedy routines.
Well, that's the kind of person, that's the kind of lady that booed the Marx Brothers off the stage in Fredonia, by the way. And my mother kind of reminds me of that character. Like, she wasn't rich, but she kind of wanted to be that lady. Like, she hung out with those ladies in our town after they moved from the farm to Westfield, New York. And I'm not bashing her. I'm just saying, you know, she had aspirations. She didn't want to just, you know, be poor. She wanted to be wealthy and, like, donate to, you know, the orchestra and things and go to high tea with the ladies. Yeah.
And for the Monty Python Flying Circus fans out there, you should know that Margaret Dumont is, for the Marx Brothers, what Carol Cleveland was for Monty Python's Flying Circus. She was the one that basically the sketches could use and abuse and almost never give her credit for it, yet none of the sketches would work without her in there. So
yeah.
A little shout out to both Carol Cleveland and Margaret Dumont for their comedic accomplishments. But yeah, so this is the situation. The government has failed. What do we do? The taxes are outrageous. The people are protesting. Something has to be done. We have to do something right now. And what's the answer? And of course, the answer is the country needs a progressive. The country needs a great man. And that great man is Rufus T. Firefly. And so there's this big fanfare and this big introduction to get to bring Rufus T. Firefly in. And they have trumpets announcing his presence and everything. And at the last minute, it shows him waking up in his bed, jumping on a fire pole, sliding down into the ballroom where this is all taking place, slips up next to the other guys that are doing the all the heralding of his introduction, and just kind of looks at it all like, how ridiculous is all of this? And that's the introduction of Rufus T. Firefly into this. He is the great man that the progressives have brought in through a rich lady who's going to finance the whole new government. And you see that so often. It's not necessarily one rich lady, but it is the unbelievably rich who decide who gets to be the great great man.
Yeah.
And the great man is typically a fool. I mean, that's kind of the message that we're being told here.
Yeah.
He's just a stooge, really. He's just a guy to fill the boots. He's like we've talked about with the Greg Brady and
the coat,
the vest, yeah, or the jacket. Yeah,
the jacket. Yeah.
It could be anybody
who can fill that coat. As long as they
fit the outfit.
Yeah, I just spent a couple weeks watching every episode ever of West Wing, or as my wife calls it, Worst Wing, which was a TV show that ran for 7 years from 1999 for 7 years on, something like that. And it's about the president, and it takes place in the White House, and it's, it's got a bunch of names, of actors. And I had a hard time watching it because it required a lot of suspension of statism, but the writer the main writer of this show, Aaron Sorkin, is someone I really like, and he's an amazing writer, and there's nobody else who really does what he does on TV. So I kind of, bit my tongue and watched it. And it's actually researched with people who've worked in the White House, interviewed a lot of them for how things work. And it's really amazing to me how much pomp and circumstance and power is foisted upon this one man, the president of the United States, who is, can actually be decided by a very thin margin of the people. And all of a sudden, has the nuclear launch codes, has full control of the Army, Navy, Marines, and, can take control of the National Guards of the states, write executive orders and tax everyone, or outlaw something overnight, or legalize something overnight. I mean, basically is acting like a king, but it's only for 4 or 8 years. And then, there's this whole process when the new guy is elected, bringing in 20 moving trucks and 80 people to move the president and the first lady out and move the new guy and his wife in, and to transfer the powers. And it's so bizarre that this whole system is set up to transfer these just almost unlimited powers to some guy for 4 years. It's kind of mind blowing to me. And it's, I guess the idea was it made more sense than having a king, but it's really just a, series of serial sociopathic kings. It's mind blowing, man.
It really is. If you think about these clowns that are passed off on us as presidents too, the current one we have now can barely speak if there's not a teleprompter in front of him. The one prior to that couldn't pronounce half the words he tried to say.
Yeah.
The one prior to that couldn't keep his zipper closed. The one prior to that was such an angry old man that he couldn't be tolerated for more than 4 years. And the one before that was senile through half of his administration.
Yeah. And the
and
next
these are
one,
the people that
the next one is going to either be, the first woman president who is, going to be one of the most heinous socialists ever, who's going to, try to radically transform America in a way that will make Barack Obama seem like a moderate, or another Bush, the stupidest of all the Bushes, Jeb Bush, a guy who will make, I don't know if he's that stupid, but he's not fit to run.
He is a Florida man.
Yeah, there's a Twitter feed called Florida Man that has, it's pretty amazing. If you go to Twitter and search Florida Man, it's all headlines about, and some of the actual headlines have the word Florida Man in them, but generally they're headlines from Florida that have the word, man caught cooking meth in a bottle in his pants, or, man gets head bitten off by alligator while trying to climb under fence at swap meet. Man holds on, full Florida man holds on to palm tree to avoid arrest, thinks palm tree grants invisibility. It's just nutty stuff. And we like Florida. We have, we're on 3 stations in Florida. I have a family in Florida. One of our co-hosts is in Florida, but a lot of weird stuff seems to happen there. So Florida man becomes president, maybe a headline soon. with Jeb Bush. Bush, man. And what didn't we fight a war to get rid of dynasties? What's with this thing of electing? And, you know, I don't want to say we, I didn't fight a war, but didn't America fight a war to get rid of dynasties? It seems like they like dynasties, you know, Kennedys, Bushes, Dukakises. Who was the governor?
Clintons.
Clintons. And the Chicago, what's the Chicago dynasty?
Oh yeah. Daily. The Dailies.
Yeah. And then in New York State, you've got the, Mary Cuomo's, the Cuomo's. Yeah. And they're all leftist. Were there any right wing dynasties? I guess the Bushes, but yeah.
Yeah. The Bushes, the Browns in California, but they're left wing also.
Yeah. All right. So duck soup, where were we, brother?
Yeah. So a failed government. And what do? You bring in another failed government. And here's the thing, too. As soon as they bring in Rufus T. Firefly to fix all the government's problems, you know what? The first thing he does once he's in office, he gets into a war. He starts a war. Amazing. and that's the answer, you know? And how many times have we seen that in real life? And this is 1933. This is the Marx Brothers in the middle of a depression saying, you know, oh, what do when a government's failed and taxes are outrageous and people are protesting and the government has been mismanaged? What's the answer to that? Well, government answer is bring on a war. And that is exactly what the when nothing else would work in the 1930s, you know, they brought on a war. That's their answer to how to fix things, destroy things, blow things up, kill people.
Yeah.
There we go. That'll fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I should say that in the movie Duck Soup, there were three things that I noticed was the use of Thompson submachine guns were fairly common in there, and they used Springfield rifles and at least one Lee Enfield rifle. So at least they were using decent weaponry in the movie.
Yeah. Well, it was the style of the day. It was probably props left over from some gangster movie.
It probably was, you know, knowing the Marx Brothers, they were probably just, they ran down to the prop room and just grabbed an armload and went running back up again.
It's pretty funny at the end during the literal battle in the innermost chamber. Groucho Marx's character in every scene is dressed in the military uniform of a different military. And at one point he's a Boy Scout. Yeah.
That's somewhat subtle, but it's still right there.
Did you catch that?
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Yeah, how about Harpo?
Yeah, Harpo. Yeah. Freedom Fiends, what you got, Ben?
So Harpo and Teller from Penn and Teller, Penn and Teller basically are utilizing an age-old comedy routine by having one, and I'm going to use the word mute, and I know that that's not the politically correct word to use nowadays, but that was the word they used back in the day to have the particular comedy routine that the Marx Brothers depended on. They needed this tool that was, you know, age old, going back into the dark ages, was to have a comedy troupe or a comedy team with one of them as the clown or as the mute. Oftentimes it would be a mute clown. This is also the origin of the French mime that we're so familiar with. But it goes all the way back into the dark ages of having the mute as a part of the comedy troupe and having him as the one that was just, he was kind of like the king's jester. He got away with stuff that nobody else could get away with because he was the mute.
Yeah.
And Harpo just plays it perfectly, and Teller has since stood on the shoulders of giants and taken that into a different direction, but Teller does it very well also. But that's the position of Harpo in these Marx Brothers. He was actually not a mute. He could speak. He just was very careful not to do so on camera, even in interviews and things like that.
Yeah, and I was wrong correction to make. On a recent show, I said that I thought that Teller of Penn and Teller talks at some point in some show. But Jim Jesus, who's a huge fan and I think has watched all their stuff, says no, he's never seen him talk except on The Simpsons, where Penn and Teller play Penn and Teller, and Penn is going nuts and chasing Homer around with a crossbow and saying, "I'll kill you, I'll kill you." And Teller speaks and says, "He'll do it. I'm not the first Teller."
In the Penn and Teller regularly, I don't think they do this anymore because I don't think the meetings are continuing nowadays. They might be. I'm not informed, so I'm not sure. But there used to be a series of meetings called The Amazing Meeting. It was a yearly meeting based around James Randi or The Amazing Randi.
You know, I'm really good friends with a guy named Steve Ziegler. I used to be roommates with him in San Francisco. He was The Amazing Randi's assistant when Steve was like, 18 to 20 or something like that, and knows him really well. So yeah,
wow.
That's kind of cool. And I've heard a lot about Randi since, before the general public thought he was hip like they do now, probably because of association with Penn and Teller. But, that kind of put a healthy bit of skepticism in my mind, 20 years ago, because I knew about Randi and I knew about his work of, skeptical, didn't he have $1 million in escrow that he was willing to give to anybody who could prove paranormal activity?
Yeah, he did. He held that for a long time before he eventually, because, they got so many really, really badly put together attempts that he had to start narrowing the criteria. And because otherwise, you get overwhelmed with people just coming up with ridiculous things. So he kept narrowing the criteria and eventually said, look, this has been going on for like 10 years. Nobody's been able to take me up on it. So we're just going to go ahead and dissolve it. But for a long time, it was $10,000. And then he was able to boost it up to $1 million. But they used to have these meetings called The Amazing Meeting, and most of them were held in Las Vegas, and Penn and Teller would always attend those. And Teller would speak freely at those meetings, but they were out of character there. They were talking strictly as, skeptics, not as Penn and Teller, the comedy magic team.
Yeah. And, Penn and Teller perform at the White House in the West Wing, and they do a trick where they make a flag disappear by folding it up, rolling it up in a copy of the Constitution, and then burning it, and it's gone, and the Constitution is unburned. And there's a big fluff of, did they actually burn a flag at the White House? And they won't tell how they did the trick, so no one knows. But the Constitution is unscathed. So their, libertarian minarchist, point is, the flag doesn't matter. It's the rights behind it. And, from a minarchist standpoint, it's a great magic trick, especially to do in front of the president at the White House at a party.
One of the things I should say, too, in praise of Penn and Teller, they do their magic tricks so that if you're standing there looking at them, you're going to be fooled by it. And there's so many magicians nowadays that do their tricks strictly for the camera. And if you're standing there watching it, they'll probably pay you off camera to nod your head on camera and pretend like you were fooled. But the whole thing is a camera trick.
Yep. Yeah, it's old school stage magic, man. We'll be back on hour two of the Freedom Fiends, a libertarian analysis of the 1933 movie Duck Soup by the Marx Brothers. Armed. Meow.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Hey, this is some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so There you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite Libair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I'm your host, Michael W. Dean, and I'm joined today by Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, from badquaker.com. Are you there, Ben?
I'm here. I'm right here.
Yeah, and you're
and we say crazy stuff like that, but what is that ion cannon? We do a lot of inside jokes here on the Freedom Fiends. What is that ion cannon you're talking about?
Oh, it's a whole theory I have about how the aliens are going to hear the aliens, the intelligent life that lives on the planet, the possibly habitable planet 4.3 light years away in the Alpha Centauri double star region, are going to hear the Freedom Fiends 4.3 years after our show started, which was about a year and a half ago. So in less than 3 years, they're going to hear it because it takes, light radio travels at the speed of light. So that's 4.3 light years. They're going to hear it. And they're going to say, man, we've been monitoring this planet for 100 years, all the radio transmissions from it. This is the first sign of intelligent life we've heard. And they're going to come down here and give me their advanced technology. And I'm going to become the libertarian emperor of the world. And allow all my friends, all the people who've been nice to me, to be spared from the wrath of the government tyranny. Either, we'll either have a shield that'll protect us from the state, or we'll just go live on Libair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region.
And we're this is all tongue in cheek, but so we're forming a cult for this, and you can send your tithes regularly. And if you have less than $2, do not send it to us because we will just curse you out on the air.
Okay, and you're all making that fun. You're making fun of something Stefan Molyneux actually does. No, you can send us $2. We'll like it.
Yeah, we'll take a dollar. We don't care.
Give me a dollar. Yeah. So. We're talking about
use Bitcoin and send us 36 cents and we'll be thrilled.
Send us used Bitcoin. Send us we'll even take your used Bitcoin. We don't care if it's old and dirty. If it's folded and crumpled, you can send us your crumpled Bitcoin. So we're talking over Fiend Phone, which is the new technology that Derek Slopey and I are inventing. He's coding. I'm helping with the criteria and the testing and the motivational speaking and the forming the whole idea of where it should go. And it's a way that we can talk over the internets for free without, and sound better than Skype. Ben's using a $50 microphone. Talk, Ben, let me hear you, how you sound.
Yeah. So actually I have a $500 mixer or something like that, that I've disconnected. And I've got like a $200 microphone that I've disconnected. And I've got a couple $100 preamp that I've disconnected. And I'm just hooked up directly through this $50 USB microphone into a really old ratty laptop that barely is alive. And this is what it sounds like through Fiend Phone.
Put your settings back how you were. I liked them the way they were before. We're still tweaking things because we are a teaching hospital. We'll do that live on the air. So we're talking about the movie Duck Soup by the Marx Brothers from 1933. Do you have your settings there, Ben, or do you need me to tell you what they are? Do you remember?
Got them. I'm almost back to them now.
Yeah. And then hit your buff dump. Yeah. We're working this out. We're inventing the roads. They say without the government, who would build the roads? We're building the cyber roads right here on the radio. So we're talking about Duck Soup. And we were talking about the vast reaching influence that it has on all modern comedy. And I was talking in particular about the show West Wing, which isn't it's not particularly a comedy. It's kind of a dramedy, but which, you know, everything from Aaron Sorkin is kind of like that. It's like really kind of highbrow, but lowbrow at the same time, which is kind of how the Marx Brothers were. And he actually references the Marx Brothers a lot. And this is kind of interesting because I watched this movie and I was like, man, Teller from Penn and Teller is totally Harpo Marx. Like he's mute, you know, mute. That's a politically incorrect word. He doesn't speak. His character doesn't speak. And, you know, he has a lot of the same physical mannerisms. He even kind of looks like him, man. And I observed that and talked to someone about that. And Jim Jesus, who's a huge fan of Penn and Teller. And he's like, no, he's nothing like that. And then I was like the next night I was watching West Wing and it's the one where Penn and Teller perform at the White House. And so after they do the flag burning trick, you know, somebody's like, get that guy and his Harpo Marx lookalike sidekick in here. I need to talk to them. Yeah.
I have changed my settings back to the original, by the way, Michael, and I hit the buffer dump.
Yeah. But there's actually a reference to Fredonia in the show West Wing, kind of showing that one of the things that Aaron Sorkin is constantly doing is like, you know, he's a Democrat, but he's like, thinks the Democrats and the Republicans should work across the aisle and be good and do great things like FDR did. It's ridiculous. But, you know, he's not your average Democrat who just wants all the Republicans killed. He actually, like, you know, believes in America and democracy and the power of voting and all that crap. But the idea that like, and I'm not saying America is crap. I'm just saying that the idea of thinking you can vote that, you can vote people into being able to rule you is ridiculous, or that you need rulers at all. But Aaron Sorkin seems really into the idea of like, well, to make America great, we have to educate the average voter. He has to have more information than he does. And I will concede that the average voter probably doesn't have enough information to vote for, you know, the winner of American Idol, let alone, you know, the president of the United States who picks the Supreme Court members who determine how a law is interpreted and basically can ruin your life. But his whole thing is like trying to educate the voters, and he's taught, you know, he's showing a political campaign or primary campaign for president and kind of trying to show how like, being outgoing goes further with voters than intelligence does, or being informed. And one of the reporters in West Wing during a press conference with one of the Democrat, you know, candidates for president asks one of the candidates to test him. He says, what do you think of the situation in Fredonia? Which is a reference to a mythical land in a movie from 1933. And the presidential candidate says, I'm looking into it. He doesn't want to sound like, oh, I don't know what that is. What is that? So that's politics in America. And that's fairly accurate that could happen, I think.
I think a similar thing to that was what happened back in, I believe it was the 08, it could have been the 012 presidential campaign debate in the Republican side, when Ron Paul was talking about the blowback effect and how that led to the events of 9/11/2001, which, again, this is not a crazy conspiracy theory thing. It's a thing that the CIA has talked about. Yeah. So Ron Paul referenced this. And Rudy Giuliani, being the mountain of intelligence that he is, either he faked it and acted falsely, or he really didn't have any idea what Ron Paul was talking about. Now, how are you mayor of New York during the attack that happened at 9/11/2001 and not have any inclination that there might be some reason that these guys did this thing? I mean, why would you even think that? Why would you think that? Why would you, if you're the mayor of New York, a former federal prosecutor with the reputation
who brought
that
down
Giuliani's
the mob,
got,
who, his reputation is that allegedly he brought down the mob, but apparently there's still the mob in New York City. But he knocked him down a peg for a couple of weeks.
He whacked one mole. But But yeah, so how can he be in that kind of position and still take the Forrest Gump mentality of history, which is, we was just walking along one day and they crashed in their planes right into those buildings.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say about that.
Man. Yeah. Giuliani, 9-11. That's his answer to everything, because, you know, he happened to be wearing the coat, wearing the multicolored dream coat of politics of the New York City mayorship the day that, you know, the like biggest news in America and the biggest tragedy in America ever happened. And, you know, he sent some firemen and some rescue work, you know, basically, I don't even know if he did anything. He just, there was a system in place and there's some rescue workers and he took credit for it. Kind of the same way George,
he did a lot of posing.
Yeah. So kind of the same way George Bush went in his like bomber jacket on a pile of rubble and borrowed a megaphone and, you know, became like his points, his rating with the American people went from like 15 to like 85% in 5 minutes because he had the right photo op. Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what the great man always does throughout history. He sits back, allows a situation to take place, and I'm not inferring.
Or does things that make a situation happen. And I'm not saying Rudy Giuliani caused 9/11, but, you know, things like Rudy Giuliani, like cleaning up the mob exists because there's government. It couldn't exist without the government.
Right. And then they pose and take, you know, to have a photo op where they stand in an impressive way. And you see things even like, you know, statues of Napoleon Bonaparte as he is on his horse in this majestic pose and whatever. When in reality, all the guy did was destroy his country's economy over and over, invade his neighbors. You know, he was just a wretched human being. And yet there's these wonderful statues of him in these perfect poses. We could do the same thing with Washington or Lincoln or any, you know, godlike character like that, that they've put into government and praise and heap upon him all the everything. They act like they're deities. I mean, and I say they, the general public acts like these people are deities, and it's kind of a leftover from the days when people actually believed that the kings or whatever were descended from the gods. It's really pathetic.
Oh, and George Bush tried to bring that back. Other presidents have done it, but George Bush literally said, you know, that God compelled him to be president, to run for president.
The funny thing about that is, too, most people in a normal setting, you know, you're having tea with someone, or you're sitting at in a coffee shop talking to someone, and you look them right in the eye and you tell them that God has told you that your destiny is to do this and that. And a lot of people are going to think, you're kind of nutty. That's not real stable of a way to think, you know? And I'm not saying that all people who are religious or who believe that they have a calling or whatever are illegitimate, but oftentimes that is an indication of insanity, is to think that you are the one person that God has chosen to do this one special job, you know, whether you're Hinckley or whether you're Manson or whether you're a Bush.
Yeah. And a lot of times when politicians claim to like solve a problem in some way, they basically are solving a problem that was caused by government. You want to give me an example of that real quick?
Oh, sure. So like the Great Depression, which was kind of the focus of this movie in 1933, the government entirely caused that situation. And then, you know, we want to look to the government as the only way to get America out of it. It's sad.
We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it.
Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, is here to talk to us about the liberty ramifications of the 1933 movie Duck Soup. Go. Duck, duck, yeah. Go. Duck, duck, go, Ben.
So one of the things that's really struck me in watching the movie again, and I've seen it probably, I don't know, I would conservatively estimate I've seen it 20 times. But early on in the movie, as soon as Rufus T. Firefly takes over, and there's this great fanfare of his introduction and everything. And then essentially they say to him, you know, like, okay, so what are you going to do? How are you going to fix these problems that we have in government? And they break into song. And in the song, he says that his first act is to put a prohibition on dirty jokes, chewing gum, and any form of pleasure. He says any form of pleasure will be prohibited. And then he goes on to reiterate that, after all, this is the land of the free. And that's what you see almost every time one of these situations comes up. What, you know, what's the president going to do? What's the government going to do? What's the mayor going to do to fix this problem, whatever it might be, whatever the problem that government has created? What's the government going to do to fix it? And the answer is always going to be to prohibit something. We're going to prohibit this. We're going to make it so that guy in New York, we're going to prohibit the selling of individual cigarettes because somehow that's what's crushing society. That's what's keeping America down is that, you know, people are trying to buy individual cigarettes. So we've got to beat anybody down that does that and choke them and you know, force them into compliance because that's where the problem is with society. It's those big gulp, that's those crazy radical people out there, those libertines out there just with no morals that are drinking a whole big gulp all by themselves. I mean, how dare they do that? That's the kind of mentality that you always get from these nanny staters that want to control everybody's behavior. And then in that same song, Rufus T. Firefly infers that all of these things will eventually be capital offenses. In other words, chewing gum, telling dirty jokes, any form of pleasure, eventually it's going to get to the point of where the only way government can enforce its prohibition is through making these things a capital offense. And that's just a really polite way of saying they'll murder you, they will kill you, they will beat you down, and if you don't submit, they'll put you in a chokehold, they'll stand on your back, they'll do whatever has to be done, they'll haul you in, throw you in a cage, they'll do whatever they have to do to hold you down and make you compliant to their wishes, because that's what government does. And that's the answer, that's the only answer that they have, whatever the problem might be.
Yeah, tell me more, Ben. Yeah, it is very square. Governments are very square. They do everything by theft, aggression, fraud. They break every single commandment, murder. They break every commandment, all 10 commandments, all day, every day. The retired co-host, Nima Vedati, and I did an episode one time called Governments Break All 10 Commandments All Day, Every Day. And if you Google that, maybe along with Freedom Fiends, you'll get that episode. It's a really good episode where we literally break it down and go through all 10 commandments and explain how every government in the world throughout history, including whatever one you listeners are living under right now, whether, and you know, international, state, county, local, neighborhood watch, no, all of them, everything. It's all bad, man. It's all bad.
You know, and this, let's take this back to a very well-used phrase that was real common back in the 70s and 80s, and then it kind of fell out of use. But the old saying was, what would Jesus do? And there were like bumper stickers that said that, and people had T-shirts that said that, and, you know, people had ball caps that said it. What would Jesus do? Well, what would Jesus do? If somebody was selling cigarettes on the street in, you know, in Israel and in Bethlehem, or in, back in 30 AD or whatever, would Jesus have advocating using violence to stop them when they brought a prostitute to him caught in the act with a married man, and they threw this woman at Jesus's feet? And they said, the law requires that she be stoned to death. What do you say we do with her? And Jesus did not advocate the stoning of this woman. Instead, he advocating the forgiving of this woman, and kind of shamed the people who wanted to kill her.
Yeah.
So we look at that today and we say, what would Jesus do? Would Jesus have a gang of, you know, thin blue line thugs that attack a guy and beat him down because he's simply trying to make a living? Is that what Jesus would do? Would Jesus elect a president who would, you know, threaten and throw himself out at other countries and invade other countries? Would Jesus do any of those things? Well, then No. Why would a Christian support a government that acts that way?
Because a lot of Christians, the Christians who do that, think they know better than Jesus. Because politicians Evidently. Tell them to. Because politicians just want to kill people because there's a lot of money in it.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Go back.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is Mr. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, standing around in my bathrobe doing radio at home over Fiend Phone with Ben Stone. That's fiendphone.com if you want to check it out. And it's a cold, cold Sunday morning here on the post New Year's. How was your New Year's, Ben? Were you asleep at midnight?
Oh yeah, I go to sleep early. I'm old, and by like 7:30, 8 o'clock, my brain is just bananas. It just turns into mush.
I was doing a show at midnight and live radio, but I wasn't on the radio at midnight. It doesn't work that way with what we do. I was listening to an ad for like body armor or something, or colloidal uranium something. body hair care products, I think. So yeah, it's fun though. I don't really care about New Year's. It's kind of, I think it's just when people who have ordinary kind of lives that don't have the intrigue that you and I do, the adventures of things like standing around talking to 100,000 people in your bathrobe. I think when you have a normal workaday kind of job, you kind of have to look at New Year's as, I kind of think that the reason people get drunk and hung over and burn their calendar and start the new year that way, it's like they're just trying to like erase the hard drive from the last year in their brain or something. I don't know. I don't look back on years that way. I'm like, yeah, great. That was a good year. Let's do another one.
Yeah. I never really got into the whole, I never really understood why one magic calendar day is different from another, and how, you know, I just never really understood that. I'm not saying that anybody's wrong or bad or anything for doing that. It just never made any sense to me as a kid, even, or as an adult.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to this Harps Brothers movie, Duck Soup from 1933, I wanted to give sort of a little overview of some of the things that we've talked about before we go into the last segment, which is our redemption in the third act. But just to kind of give an overview, what happens in this movie is that the government has been mismanaged, the government of Fredonia. Fredonia is sort of they kind of indicate through dress and through some of their activities that they do that it's a sort of a Bavarian type nationality that they have. And their opponent is Sylvania, which is, they show a shot of it. It's clearly a Mediterranean, maybe in Italy or maybe Sicily or something like that. But that's the indication. And then, so the government has been mismanaged. The taxes are outrageous. The people are protesting. The government has failed. They look to the Margaret Dumont character, which is this unbelievably rich lady. They look to her to fix what's wrong with government because the government is completely broke. And she says the only way we're going to do this is if we get this new guy, this progressive, this great man, this Rufus T. Firefly, to come in and fix government. And there's an indication that she kind of has an infatuation with Rufus T. Firefly. So, and of course, he plays up on that because Groucho Marx always goes for the ladies. And then so then they have this song, which is going to Groucho Marx's character explaining how he's going to fix the problems with government. And how is he going to fix the problems with government? Well, he's going to outlaw dirty jokes, gum chewing, any form of pleasure. After all, this is the land of the free, he says. And then he says that he's going to make all these things a capital offense. So the government is mismanaged. The government has spent all of its money and is broke. The government is in all this kind of problems. It's overtaxing the people. And what is the government's answer to that? More prohibitions, more restrictions on people, more punishing of the people for what the government, for the mess that the government has created. And of course, that's just going to make things worse. And then as the movie progresses, there's one universal solution that government comes up with to fix everything, and that is war. And eventually that's how the movie ends, with Rufus T. Firefly leading his country into war based on personal insults passed back and forth between the head of Sylvania and the head of Fredonia. And this is a mirror image. This is a picture of how governments work. And this is in a time, 1933, the First World War was still right there on the taste buds of the American people. They remembered what it was like. They remembered the horror, and they remembered the tragedy that was World War One. And they were looking also at the buildup of the completion of World War One, which was the Second World War. They could see this thing coming even in 1933 as the Nazis were developing in Germany, and as Italy was going further and further into fascism, and as Spain was going into fascism. They could see these things coming, and they knew that there was going to be more war. And the United States was right in the heart of the Depression. And it was clearly obvious, and they had just come out of the prohibition of alcohol. So what the Marx Brothers are portraying here is that, sure, government fails, government overtaxes, government oppresses the people, and the only answer that the government can come up with is more oppression of the people until it gets so desperate that it has to involve itself in a war to distract the people from all the evils that government has done up until that point. And this reminds me, right before we went to the last break, Michael mentioned that of war profiteers, there is lots of money to be made in war, but it's only a very small group of people, chosen people, who make money off of war. Overall, war destroys massive amounts of wealth. Mostly it destroys the wealth of the working class people. It takes the wealth away from them. And we saw that in the Second World War, where the working class people in the United States and in England and in other countries that were fighting this, the working class people had to suffer having their, all their food items restricted. They had to get coupons to allow them to have a certain amount of flour, to have a certain amount of sugar, to have a certain amount of fat, to have a certain amount of meat. They had to turn in their fat back to the government so the government could use that. They couldn't just go out and buy a set of tires. They had to get a coupon for that, a permission from the government to buy a set of tires.
My parents grew up in that. I mean, when I was a kid, they would tell me about rationing in World War II to get me to eat my vegetables and things.
Yeah. And even things like gasoline were rationed. This developed a black market for
sliced
all these
bread.
Items, of course.
Sliced bread. You know the phrase, the greatest thing since sliced bread? We had a Fiends episode one time called the government banning the greatest thing since sliced bread. They actually banned selling sliced bread during World War II at one point for about a year. because they felt it was decadent and it was a waste of resources to slice it at the factory.
Man. And that's, you know, that's the government's answer. It's to punish the innocent, punish the people who didn't start the war, punish the people who didn't set the economy up to crash. You know, it's backwards thinking to think that the government ever has the answer to these things. There's recently there was a movie that's based on Little Orphan Annie, and I'm not going to go into, I didn't see the movie. It's a musical, and there's odds are I'll never see the movie. But I thought an interesting thing that they did in the latest incarnation of this movie was that they dropped the name of the adoptive father, and he's no longer called Daddy Warbucks. And I looked into that a little bit because I thought, well, I wonder why they didn't use the traditional, Little Orphan Annie's father's name, Daddy Warbucks. And I looked into it, and the original author of the cartoon strip from the 1920s, Little Orphan Annie, was kind of a proto-Randian, pro-industrial type, not really libertarian, but sort of an individualist capitalist supporter. And he created the character of Daddy Warbucks. And the background story to this guy is that he himself was raised as an orphan, and he pulled himself up by his bootstraps in the great American story. And at the beginning of the First World War, he was in a position where he controlled a manufacturing facility. And through the course of World War I, he became vastly wealthy. And they called him, like, I think it was a gajillionaire or a bazillionaire or some, you know, some.
He was probably just a multimillionaire, but, you know, back then it was a gajillionaire.
Yeah. But in the comic strip, he had so much money that he could pretty much buy anything. And he had gotten it all through war profiteering. And in the 1920s, this was understood. It was understood that that there were war profiteers that specifically made money off of the war when everyone else suffered. And so that was he wrote that in, and it was a believable part of the script of this story. But nowadays, that's no longer understood by the general public. The general public doesn't understand that the reason that the United States went into war in Afghanistan, went into war in Iraq, went into war in Panama, went into war in Grenada, went into war in Vietnam and Korea, and you just keep going all the way back. The reason why is because it makes a vast amount of money for a very small group of people.
Well, it also makes a really good living for a large number of people, which did not exist in the Daddy Warbucks days. In the Daddy Warbucks days, it was like the guy who owned the factory and maybe his stockholders. And, you know, the people working in the factory were barely scraping by. Now, like, for instance, Halliburton, you know, huge military industrial contractor, basically had a lot to do with, I won't say the bombing of Iraq. I don't have the facts in front of me, but, you know, Cheney pushed through the war in Iraq on what turns out to be wrong information, and who knows whether he had the right information or not. I'm not going to go on record saying he lied, because I don't know, and he lives right up the street from me. The thing is, like, Halliburton, his company, did a lot of the rebuilding of Iraq at American taxpayer expense, provided a lot of the contractors, and a lot of the, like, contracted with the people that provided the military contractors, you know, the soldiers with beards who look like American soldiers, except they have beards and they do not have an American flag on their shoulder, and they make 8 times what American soldiers make, but they have to buy their own health insurance and they don't have a pension, that kind of stuff. And they don't have to live by the rules of engagements of the U.S. Constitution. And Halliburton, you know, is a huge part of that. And literally, like, I don't know what the number of people that work for Halliburton in the state I live in Wyoming is, but you know, there are 3 Halliburton trucks parked on my block any given night. And that kind of, like, and those people make, you know, $100,000 a year doing, you know, engineering or minerals management in this state, or working with the mining industry or the oil well digging or the uranium processing, or, you know, being electricians for the above or being accountants for the above. And, you know, those people make really, really good money for the quote unquote private sector. So it's kind of this embedded military industrial complex where you're not just criticizing Daddy Warbucks and, you know, he'll have his friend, the president, throw you in prison for treason. It's more like you can freely criticize that stuff, but it's your neighbors, you know, it's your neighbors who are going to say, you're trying to get rid of my good job and pension, and I've got a family to take care of. And people have families to take care of. And this in these embedded systems, you know, I mean, that's just following orders, man. That all comes down to, like, everyone's got a mortgage to pay somewhere. They've gamed the system like that.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends. Ben Stowe, the Bad Quaker. That's the other guy. I'm Michael Dean. And Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, is going to give us what we call the redemption in the third act. We've scared the heck out of you. Now Ben's going to tuck you into bed, tuck you in for your afternoon nap after your afternoon gumbo. So what do you got there, Ben?
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention, we haven't said it this time, but we do believe that Barack Obama is a liar and a socialist and his feet stink.
Yeah.
So anything we're saying here, you shouldn't take as some kind of indication that we're pro-Democrat or pro-Republican or even pro-Libertarian Party. I think we slammed them a little bit in the first hour.
Yeah.
But we don't believe that government is the answer. We believe people is the answer. You know, Michael and Derek have been working on this Fiend phone, and they did it not by, you know, getting a hold of a university and getting some government grants and getting some, you know, even venture capital from major, corporate investor. They didn't do that. What they did was really the true American way, which is to see a need in the market. And Michael saw the need in the market, and he said, you know what, I know a guy who can probably do this. And he got together with Derek, and the two of them, you know, hashed it out. What does it need to look like? What does it need to do? How does it need to function? How does it need, what form does it need to be in? How are we going to distribute it? How are we going to pay for it? And they thrashed these things out on their own without any tax support, without robbing anybody to get the things that they want. And that's really, I mean, if you have to get all national on things and if you have to get, patriotic and thump your breast and say, I'm an American, this is the American way of doing stuff. This is the way of getting in there and getting your hands dirty and performing something, doing something, creating something into the market that people will want and people respond to. That's really how capitalism works. Capitalism doesn't work by getting some giant corporation to have a deal with a senator or deal with the government in some way to lock up a local monopoly where it's either difficult to get in and do business, or you have to jump through a lot of hoops, or you have to get permission slips. None of that stuff really is the free market, and none of it is really true capitalism. True capitalism is where individuals respond to a market demand. And that's our answer. Our answer is not, let's take up arms and fight this government. Our answer is not, let's figure out which Bush we can elect this time, or which Clinton is going to be our great person this time. That's not the answer. The answer is not depending on government to solve your problems. The answer is not even calling your local police force and demanding that they do something about those crazy kids and their loud rock and roll music. That's not the answer to your problem. The problem is communicating with people, getting on a human level and fixing problems that you have on a one-to-one human level, and not depending on the force and the aggression of government to do what it is that you want done. And as we do that, the need for government begins to disappear. And right now, it seems like, you know, we look out across the vastness of tyranny that has surrounded the world, and we think that there's no solution, or we think that the only solution is more government. And yet, the real solution is the old-time solution, the solution that existed before government, the solution that was Jesus sitting there saying, who's going to pick up the rock and throw the first stone? And the answer is not government, and the answer is not government-inflicted laws, and the answer is not more prohibitions, and the answer is not more war. The answer is humans interacting with each other on a peaceful and voluntary level, looking at each other in the eye, understanding that we are all flawed, we all have our limitations, and working around those limitations and allowing whoever has a product or a service that is wanted in the market, allow them to bring that to the market and allow them to do so voluntarily, and allow people to purchase that item or that service voluntarily without the government's interference. That's the day we hope for.
Thank you, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, for dropping some mad scientists in our lap there. It's always good to have you on. You always make me feel better.
Thank you, Michael.
After making me feel worse by telling me the truth about the world. And that's why it's the redemption in the third act. You're welcome. Thanks, Ben.
And we can even talk on top of each other.
We can talk. Let's do it. Ben, thank you for your service. I really appreciate everything you've done.
Michael.
And yeah, it's pretty good. And
Fiendphone.com.
That's Fiendphone.com or FreedomFiends.com. It's all good. We'll be back for thousands of more episodes in the upcoming year, every day of the week on the Freedom Fiends. If we're not on 7 days a week on your local station, call your local station and ask for the program director and politely ask him why.
Very polite.